From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Amnesty International has issued a travel warning for visitors planning trips to the United States. The warning says that, quote, depending on the traveler's gender identity, race, country of origin, ethnic background, or sexual orientation, they may be at higher risk of being targeted by gun violence and should plan accordingly. The amnesty warning came at about the same time as several nations, Japan, Germany, Ireland, the Bahamas, and New Zealand, issued similar cautionary notices to U.S.-bound travelers. When asked about those warnings last Friday, Trump said flippantly, "Well, I can't imagine that, but if they did that, we'd just reciprocate. We are a very reciprocal nation with me as the head. When somebody does something negative to us in terms of a country, we do it to them." Tens of thousands of people lose their lives to gun violence each year in the U.S., and mass shootings as well as hate crimes are spiking under Trump. My guest is Jasmeet Sidhu, the research manager for the End Gun Violence Campaign at Amnesty International USA. She led the organization's research into the U.S.'s obligations to prevent gun violence and its impact on human rights for the End Gun Violence Report in the Line of Fire, Human Rights and the U.S. Gun Violence Crisis. Welcome to the program, Jasmeet.
Thank you, Sonali.
So first, is this unusual for Amnesty to issue such a report about the U.S.? We hear about such warnings for other countries, you know, war zones, etc. Was this the first time that Amnesty issued a travel warning about the U.S.?
Yes, it was. And it was really done as a way to draw attention to our research on this issue and to highlight the current environment here in the United States, as you mentioned, with the rise in xenophobic rhetoric and kind of virtually unfettered access to firearms. It was more geared to be an action that was taken on this unique issue and not necessarily something that would be replicated by other sections.
So the gun violence epidemic in the United States has, it seems, been getting worse and worse. Mass shootings are actually only a small proportion, I understand, of all the sort of gun-related deaths in the country. I thought what was remarkable about this warning was that it was letting travelers know that based on their identity, they may need to be more careful. Is that something new under Trump?
I don't think that it's necessarily something new. I think we have seen trends and in the United States, for example, post 9/11, where there have been spikes in hate crimes and incidents of a rise in hate groups in the United States. I think that, you know, all elected officials and public figures have a responsibility to kind of try to unify us and to ensure that that we are not being divided. And unfortunately, under this administration, there has been there have been ties to the way that rhetoric, xenophobic rhetoric, has been used on social media, at rallies, and in other public forums that have direct links to actual incidents of hate crimes. So that is problematic and something that we want to draw attention to.
Right. The El Paso shooter essentially said that he was picking off Mexicans when he committed the mass shooting at the Walmart in El Paso, sparing white and black shoppers and literally searching for people who looked Latino. So in that one incident in particular, the racial and national background of the victims was incredibly critical. We hear a lot about, from gun proliferation activists, about the rights of gun owners to bear arms. We don't hear enough about the obligation of the government to protect citizens from gun violence. What are those obligations?
Those obligations are at least under international human rights law and that framework to protect people's right to live. I mean, here we're talking about really the right to go about your life, to walk down the street, to move freely, to feel safe from gun violence, and the right to be free from discrimination. There are numerous human rights treaties that the United States has signed or ratified that require them to uphold these values and to ensure that they are protecting individuals in the U.S. from having their human rights threatened. And the real issues, there are things that could be done right now, today, by legislators if they had the political will to do it, that could decrease gun violence and could protect more people. They're just not doing it. Right. So that is something that we also want to draw attention to.
On Monday, there were reports of a shooting on a freeway in Riverside, Southern California, not far from where our program is recorded, where a man shot fatally a police officer. He literally just pulled out a rifle from his car and began shooting in this prolonged gunfight. And people who were driving on the freeway had their cars shot at. I mean, a mother with her children driving on the freeway had her a bullet enter her car. I mean, it just seems more and more out of control. What are some of those things that the politicians could do immediately? It seems as though there are two things that are being discussed in the legislature. One is universal background checks as a House bill that passed, and the Senate has yet to pass it. And there is this idea of renewing the assault weapons ban. Would those two be good starting points?
Yes, I think they would. As you mentioned, it's really up to Senator McConnell to take some kind of action on S-42, which is the universal background checks bill in the Senate. The House has already passed it. And universal background checks are kind of just the first step that could be taken by the government. All it really requires is that every single person who purchases a firearm has to go through a background check. And currently in the United States, only people who purchase firearms through federally licensed dealers are required to do that. So if you buy from a private seller or at a gun show, you aren't required to go through a background check. And, that's kind of just the first step. And it's something that over 90% of Americans agree with when polled, that they all support universal background checks. So it's clear that it's really the legislators, it's up to them now to take action in accordance with public opinion. And then you mentioned also the assault weapons ban. We're seeing in the context of mass shootings, but also in the context of everyday gun violence in certain communities, that assault weapons, large capacity magazines, and other accessories, even body armor, are being used to terrorize communities and to make people feel less safe. And we just saw last week, I believe, a shopper at a Walmart walking around with
in Missouri.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, Missouri, walking around with an AK-47 and filming people's reactions. So really just trying to get a reaction from other people about how scared they were to see an assault weapon being, carried in public in a public place. So the assault weapons ban could have an impact on actually reducing access to these types of dangerous weapons that are really, military grade and have no place on the streets of our country.
It's really remarkable that there was this report about the sales of bulletproof backpacks spiking following recent mass shootings because parents are so anxious about the possibility of their children and school being shot at that in the absence of any meaningful change politically, they're literally buying body armor for their children. Parents, I should say, we are buying body armor for our children. The U.S. is turning into a Wild West.
Yes, I mean, I think that with the coverage of mass shootings and school shootings in the United States, it is causing more concern for parents, myself included. And I think, you know, a reaction to that is that people are trying to take advantage and sell these products. I would just say that, you know, we've seen that in a lot of mass shootings, even police officers that have bulletproof vests are not immune to gun violence. So in some ways, it's a way to kind of capture this this problem in the United States and take advantage of it. But sadly, a bulletproof backpack might not prevent someone from being injured by gun violence in the United States. So it's in some ways irresponsible to even have those available.
In your report, you point out that thousands of children die from gun violence in the U.S., primarily many of them because they live in a household, that a gun-owning household. That's something that just doesn't get very much attention.
Right. I think, as you mentioned before, there are a lot of different aspects of gun violence that need to be dealt with and that need to be where we need stronger policies around how to safeguard access. So, you know, we talk about universal background checks, we talk about the assault weapons ban, but there's also legislation, for example, called Ethan's Law, which is actually named after a boy who went over to play at his friend's house and the parents didn't tell this family that they had a firearm in their home, and accidentally the gun went off and this boy ended up dying. So, you know, it's an attempt to draw attention to, you know, the lack of requirements for safe storage in many states around the country. And without that requirement for, you know, a lethal weapon, how that can result in preventable deaths for children and for communities as well.
The Second Amendment, which we mentioned earlier, which is something that seems to be held supreme over our heads and over our right to just live safely, states that a well-regulated militia shall not, you know, the right of the people to keep and bear arms should not be infringed. That those two words, well-regulated, seem to be completely ignored by gun proliferation activists. Shouldn't that, you know, give those who want to preserve the Second Amendment enough justification to pass reasonable gun laws?
Yes, I mean, I think so. I think that, you know, even looking at, you know, Supreme Court cases and, you know, the language of our Supreme Court justices, they have very clearly stated that the Second Amendment doesn't prevent the reasonable restrictions on certain types of firearms and on access to firearms in the United States. So, you know, there is a precedent for being able to pass legislation, for being able to try to enact policies that safeguard the public. It's just not being done.
Just meet the example of Chicago is often cited by Gun Proliferation Act advocates, by the NRA, by people who, you know, don't want to see any regulations on guns because they say Chicago has some of the strongest gun regulations in the country and yet has some of the worst gun-related violence in the nation. And the report that you helped to co-author has a lot of focus on Chicago. What is your response to those who cite Chicago as a failed example of gun regulations?
I think it's an example of the complex nature of gun violence in the United States, and it's also kind of the talking point for people that don't want to see any regulation. If you can't fix this, you know, problem as a whole, then we don't want to take any steps to fix it at all. You look at a city like Chicago, which does have fairly stringent gun regulations, but if you know anyone can drive to Indiana and get you know, a truckload full of assault weapons and bring them back into Chicago, that's not something that Chicago has control over. And all we need to do is look at the recent shooting in Gilroy at the Gilroy Food Festival, where you're looking at a state like California that has pretty strong laws around access to assault weapons and minimum age requirements. Yet all it took is someone driving across to a state with more lax laws and being able to purchase them and then carry out that gun violence in another state.
Right, so, Gilroy got it, for the Gilroy shooter got it from Nevada.
Right, and so it's really critical that a comprehensive approach is taken to addressing gun violence. It's not just about passing laws at the federal level, it's about passing laws at the state level as well. It's about having uniform restrictions that apply to everyone so that if people cross state lines, they aren't putting other people at risk. And it's also important to look at what causes gun violence in particular communities and how certain communities in Chicago don't have to face the same type of gun violence as other neighborhoods do. And why is that happening? What are some holistic ways, community-led violence intervention programs that could be better supported, that could actually solve and reduce gun violence in those communities while helping address the root problem of access to firearms. So that's something that, I think also deserves a lot of attention. There are a lot of people in Chicago who are survivors of gun violence that have, through their own money and their own fundraising, started different violence intervention programs and after school programs and other programs to try to address this issue. And that's really something that the United States should be supporting.
There is much more in your report that we don't have time to get to, such as the fact that suicides are actually the topmost cause of gun-related deaths. There's a lot of gender-based violence that we see. Police gun violence is something that also is in the report, and often people don't see the use of police force as part of the problem of gun violence. But I'm wondering if we can turn in the last couple of minutes of our conversation to another Amnesty report, Scars of Survival, Gun Violence and Barriers to Reparation in the U.S. Those who survive gun violence in the U.S., are left deeply traumatized. And just as the government seems to not take seriously the right of people to live free from gun violence, it doesn't seem to want to address or help those survivors of gun violence, those people who are left with mental and physical injuries, right?
Yes, definitely. And I think, for our research team here at Amnesty, in compiling the In the Line of Fire report, we spoke to survivors around the country who are dealing with a lot of issues and wanted, that was an area that we wanted to go back and do more follow-up research on to really look at it in the context of what is the duty of the United States when they fail to prevent, human rights violations and they fail to prevent gun violence. What duty do they have to those people who survive and who, through no fault of their own, are injured by gun violence and then left to deal with the consequences? And it's really quite astounding. Many of the people that we spoke to, were on Medicaid and didn't have access to long-term health care, mental health care.
Right, the government doesn't provide health care either unless you fall into certain categories. So on that front, it fails as well.
Right. And then looking at, we do have the system of victims compensation programs that are available through the state to try to compensate survivors of violent crimes. The problem there is that in some states there are arbitrary caps and ceilings on what can be provided, which, as we know, the astronomical cost of health care in the United States, it hardly ever actually meets the amount that's needed by the survivor. And there are also other arbitrary kind of obstacles, like, for example, if someone has been convicted of a felony, they may not have access to victims compensation funds in certain states, which is also problematic. And so those are some of the things that we look at. And we also look at how gun violence survivors have to sometimes change jobs and change where they live and rely on their families to help take care of them as they try to heal from these incidents over which they have no control. So we think it's really important to tell the story of survivors. A lot of people just focus on the number of people who die and not the hundreds of thousands of people who live with these ramifications of gun violence.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
My guest is Jasmeet Sidhu, the research manager for the End Gun Violence Campaign at Amnesty International USA. She led AI USA's research into the US's obligations to prevent gun violence and its impact on human rights for the End Gun Violence Report, In the Line of Fire, Human Rights and the US Gun Violence Crisis. We've been discussing Amnesty's recent travel warning for US-bound travelers, as well as the report. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our video channel on Vimeo, and find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.